Little Emily biting her sister, or is teenage Barry refusing to help around the house? Consulting psychologist David Carey joins us to answer all your parenting woes. David Carey's with us once again for our parenting slot. David, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Sean.
First question is this. We are very worried about our 13-year-old boy and don't know who else we can ask. Recently, he has had massive behavioural changes, OCD issues possibly, completely zoning out for minutes, unable to deal with any tiny pattern change in his daily life, which he sees as completely unacceptable. He's gone very quiet, gets into repetitive patterns of body actions, gets into a tizzy over tiny changes. Last night he couldn't sit down in the same seat. He got up from because someone else sat in it and broke down. He wants to keep wearing the same clothes now. He seems a little pale too. He's a really loving kid and we're really worried as it seems to be getting worse. He is great at sports and was always an angel. We're very worried.
I'm stunned to hear that they didn't know who else to ask with this massive amount of very serious symptoms. Mm. This boy needs help. He needs assessment immediately. You have to call your GP and get a referral to a mental health practitioner. You may want to go through the public service, and I would think with this many symptoms, he would be seen as a priority. I haven't the slightest what could be going on with him, but it all sounds quite serious for a 13-year-old to be undergoing all these kinds of things. A massive behavioral change, that usually means either drastic withdrawal or aggressive and obnoxious and the belligerent behaviors, OCD issues, which they refer to with not wanting to sit in a chair that someone else sat in. Completely zoning out for minutes. That raises questions about neurological difficulties or serious psychiatric symptomatology. Can't deal with pattern change. Gone very quiet. Repetitive pattern. How many symptoms does a person need before they're seen for help? This is an astonishing list, to be honest. Any one of those things you would be wanting to get the child assessed. Get on the phone immediately, ring your GP, get this prioritized, get your boy some help as soon as possible.
Yeah, okay. There's no really other answer to that, and it's pointless to speculate as to what it might be.
I couldn't speculate, but there's too much here.
Yeah.
And all of it is serious alone. Take it all together. It's extremely worrying.
My 6-year-old son attends school close to our home. He's in senior infants with 21 students in his class. He attended preschool for a year before school and made some very strong friendships there, which continued on into big school as all 6 boys stay together in the same classroom. The policy of our school, and mainly due to restrictions on teacher-pupil ratio, is that at some stage in the primary school years, the class will be mixed with another level class, which is within this mix, though, the school think it's a good idea to separate the pupils who've been together in the same class since starting school. The school's reasoning behind this is that it should help children to learn to mix better. Surely it's more important to build on existing friendships and nurture that bond than to break it up. My question is, how would this kind of disruption and separation affect kids of this age from a psychological and emotional point of view? Also, where would trauma fit into this scenario? How would this affect a child's sense of trust in adults and the system of life even? I am aware that children are adaptable and resilient, but every time I think about my son and his friends no longer being together, all I feel is a sense of trauma it will cause them. They're such great friends and have been together since they were 3 years of age.
Oh, please calm down. There's nothing that's necessarily going to harm your child by being moved into a different class, separated from some of his friends. I'm sure they will get together on break time and have a wonderful time together, comparing notes about students they know. Friendships ebb and flow through the childhood years. We all know the dynamic where two children are the best of friends. Have a bust up. You're my worst enemy. I'll never talk to you again. And 2 months later, if it takes that long, they're best friends again. There's nothing wrong here. Trauma doesn't fit into the equation at all. Lifelong psychological difficulties accruing from this don't fit into the equation at all. I think this is a parent who may be projecting a lot of their own anxieties onto the child. School is reasonably well-intentioned here. Mm. There's nothing wrong with them making that decision. Not every class group has to go together year after year, lockstep, junior, senior, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th class. Nothing wrong with breaking them up once in a while. Generally speaking, it's good for us to learn to know how to make new friendships, form new bonds, become tolerant and accepting of the differences between people that we haven't really befriended before. These are healthy things for brain development, social development, and emotional development. So I don't think there's anything to be concerned about here.
Yeah. And just to reiterate for people who mightn't have caught it, this is a six-year-old we're talking about. He's not 16. They weren't in prisoner of war camp together.
Well, it depends on who the infant teachers were.
I suppose, yeah.
The writer says, yes, I'm aware that children are resilient. And of course, here again, that's where we can urge parents to go down their mental checklist. You know, has there been any change in your child's sleep pattern? Been any change in their eating pattern? Any change in their general emotional tone? Any change in terms of social withdrawal or isolation, intolerance, anger outbursts? The answer is no to all those boxes. You have nothing to worry about, as compared and contrasted to the first question, in which we have every possible yes box that exists nearly ticked. And so I wouldn't be concerned about this little six-year-old who is in senior infants with 21 in his class, and he'll move on for a year now and make some new friends. And I'm going to assume he's a happy, well-adjusted young fellow. It's good to make new friends.
Yeah.
In fact, it's a lovely thing.
My daughter, also six, still not dry at night. She's no problems going to the toilet during the day. Would never have a daytime accident. At nighttime, however, she's a deep sleeper, just does not wake up to use the toilet. We do the whole no drinks after six and she goes to bed around eight. We then wake her up for the toilet around 11. Sometimes this works, and then often it doesn't. Can this run in families? My sister wet the bed at night until she was about 10 years old. I feel bad for my daughter because down the line this will impact on her for perhaps sleepovers, etc. Is there anything we can do apart from wait for it to right itself eventually?
I can't think of anything you can do. You're using the right interventions there, restricting fluids. Does it run in families? I can't give you the honest genetic answer to that. Certainly family history of worries and anxieties and things like that have a strong genetic component. Could be. I don't know what's going on here. Is there some sleep disturbance? Have you talked to the GP? Maybe restrict her fluids for 1 hour earlier. You're waking her up at 11. I wonder how she's dealing with that because she's going to bed at 8. By 11, she will have gone through a couple of REM sleep cycles. To be awakened at 11 to go to the toilet may be a little bit distressing to her. I don't know. Only the parents know what's best. You might just have to wait and see if it's writing itself out. I also wonder if the time comes when it's for her to have sleepovers, if the problem just doesn't go away completely.
Yeah, I can say from my own experience that I did have one who was shocking for this, that she was just such a sound sleeper. Putting her to bed last thing at night, or putting her onto the toilet last thing at night when she'd been asleep.
Yeah.
She'd still wet the bed. The thing is, she didn't care. She'd snooze all the way through it.
Yeah.
And the only answer we found that worked was that we'd make her sleep with one of her sisters, so that when she wet the bed, she'd get a kick. then she learned to stop doing it.
An interesting intervention.
Yes.
And how do her and her sister get on these days?
They're still all knocking lumps out of each other anyway. That's par for the course. My four-year-old son is a happy, healthy little chap, full of fun and a ball of energy. I've just one question. He has an older sister and a younger brother. He loves dressing up in dresses, loves all things pink and sparkly. His favourite colour is pink and spends most of his time in preschool playing with the girls. Loves playing with dolls and Barbies. He's a great imagination. What's the problem, you ask? There is no problem. We love him no matter what. But my husband and I wonder what this means. Is it a phase? Please don't judge me for asking this. It doesn't matter either way, but I just want to know if it's an indication of who he'll be.
Well, thank you for your question. And don't worry, you can write in any questions, send us anything. There's no judgment here. This isn't a court of law. We're here to try to help and reassure.
Oh, no,
parents.
I judge him, but I just won't say it.
Oh, do you?
You're impartial and you love everybody. I'm not.
Well, I'm much more evolved than you, apparently.
Yes, you are. Yeah.
Now, is there a problem here necessarily? No, there is not necessarily. Mm. Forget about the color pink. The response to that is, who cares? He likes pink. Mm. No big deal. I don't know why we associate pink with little girls anyway.
Yeah.
Some cultural, social history evolving around that. Now, he likes to play with dolls. Does he like to dress up and pretend play in girls' clothes, I wonder? Well, what does it mean? Is it just a phase? Yeah. It's a play choice. It doesn't in and of itself mean anything. Now, we do have such a thing as gender dysphoria, and that is a genuine condition which usually manifests itself early in childhood, but it requires, in order to be diagnosed, a lot more signs and symptoms than what we have here, to be honest. And very often children will express that they just don't feel like their biological body looks.
Yeah.
And they may develop actually a hatred. In fact, I had a parent contact me just today with a little boy who's far more involved in what we would call genuine gender dysphoria and has been saying to parents that he hates his willy. Why did God give him a willy? I mean, that is really letting us know that this is a male body which is containing a female gender because we don't have time, but there is a difference between sex and gender. So I don't think you should be worried about it. Just encourage free play and free exploration. If it evolves into an obsessive need to wear little girls' clothes or something, probably the best way to deal with that is that's a private thing. We do it in the house. It's okay, because if he wants to do that in school or whatnot, it's going to cause some social difficulties. We haven't come that far as a society yet that we can really contend with all of these issues. So try not to worry. Love him. Accept him as he is. Monitor as it goes along. He may just lose interest in these kinds of things and broaden his scope of play resources. Then again, he may not.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You don't. It's probably too early to say. You do read stories of people who did transition into another gender and say, well, you know, but when they, because when I was four, I was playing with dollies, but that's looking back, you can kind of see.
That's looking back, yeah. The vast majority of people who have actually transgendered, though, will tell you that right from my earliest self-awareness, I felt that my body was wrong for me. They may not use those exact words, but there is this inborn sense that there's a girl inside a boy's body or a boy inside a girl's body. And they really cop it on pretty quick in life and very early. And it causes, of course, a huge social difficulties and huge psychological hurdles that must be overcome.
Yeah, and for many of them, actually, because we've done pieces on this before, but heading into puberty is profoundly disturbing.
Extremely.
For them to feel like this. Kat says, just as in relation to the last question we had there about the little fella who likes pink and likes to play with dollies, and perhaps what does that mean, if it means anything. Kat says, it's funny how parents never worry about tomboy girls who refuse to wear dresses and like boy stuff. What does that say about how we value femininity in our society? But it is an interesting point you make there. In relation to the other question we had, this was about the six-year-olds changing class and will it traumatise them? Durville says, we changed class when I was in first class and that's when I met two of my lifelong friends. Anne in Limerick, though, says, David is too blasé about the separating of friends in school issue. It is traumatic. Our school did it and children wept and worried about it all summer holidays. Some children have better coping skills than others and others find it hard to bond with new friends, says Anne. The thing is, this is just me. You're the mental health professional. Have we got to a point now where feckin' everything's a trauma? Everything's the wind changes direction and your child will be scarred for life by this. We've covered them in sort of bubble wrap so that when they're eventually going out into the world, they're not able to cope with anything.
Well, I find it hard to imagine that an entire class of primary school children wept and carried on all summer long because their class was changed. If they did, I'd be wanting to meet with all the parents of those children because I'd like to see what's going on there. Mm. To answer your question, it's a very good point you've just made, Sean, because much like the term bullying, the term trauma has been dumbed down to almost meaninglessness now, so that almost everything is potentially traumatic. Trauma can be defined a little bit more precisely than that. So I just think we live in an age of paranoid parenting where we are so burdened, we being parents, so burdened with the crushing weight of attempting to do everything right and never seeing our children discomforted. And I can tell you, and I've said this before, if a parent is successful and seeing to it that their child is never discomforted in childhood and early to late adolescence, they will be crippled for life.
Yeah.
Because the only way we learn to cope with life's adversities, distractions, and difficulties is to confront them, to be encouraged to deal with them, to know that our parents are there to support us when we fall, maybe sometimes to catch us before we hit the ground, but certainly always to have their hands out to help us get up again and move forward in life. And that's positive parenting.
Yeah.
To protect them and surround them with a sort of an invisible shield that makes all life's difficulties bounce away before they hit is not a particularly good way to parent children.
Yeah. And on that point, the next question is this. My son of 34 is recovering from a marriage breakup. How do I prevent him being too dependent on me, his mom?
Isn't it lovely that he would be dependent on you?
Mm.
We have this lovely concept in parenting called the secure base. The secure base is your primary attachments in life, from which throughout the course of childhood and adolescence, you move farther and farther away from, knowing, of course, that the secure base is always there, the nest, you might think,
yeah,
to which you can return in times of trouble and difficulty. Marriage breakup is extremely difficult. And sometimes I think adults find themselves in need of close proximity to the secure base of mom and or dad or both. And they derive great comfort from that.
Mm.
And that's where, of course, we were loved the most and accepted the most, hopefully, if all went reasonably well. So there's nothing wrong with reaching out, your son reaching out to you. I don't think he'll become too dependent on you. No, I don't know him, and I don't know the circumstances of his earlier life with you or the circumstances of the dissolution of his marriage. But let's keep it simple. He's hurting. There's pain in his life. He's sad, confused, maybe doesn't know how to move forward. Sometimes getting up in the morning is a triumph of his will and spirit, and he needs some close proximity to mom and or dad if there is a dad involved in the picture. This is healthy. This is good. Listen, support, let him know you're there. Be honest. You can't solve all his problems. He needs to know that this is life in all its mysteries unfolding over and over, and that it's a good thing to have a mom or a dad there to help you. Please don't worry. Just continue being what sounds to me like the wonderful mom you have been.
It's an interesting thing, actually, because I was talking about to somebody about this the other day, that at that in that scenario where, you know, the kids grow up in the family home, kids grow up and you know, they may be in their 20s or 30s even. Mom and dad are now rocking around a big empty old house that the kids only stay in occasionally. But even when they're in their 30s or perhaps 40s, they don't want mom and dad to sell that house as a kind of a just-in-case thing, you know.
Yes,
and it's almost like when they do sell the house, that's traumatic, because that's when the kids finally, who are now grown up, have to go, oh, right, I'm on my own now. So even if they're married themselves and they have kids and everything.
Yeah, well, that's very true, because the house is the nest. That's the place where you grew up. And that's where all your security was derived from. And it, of course, contains within it every sight, sound, taste, and smell of your familiar and your security. So your brain, when you re-enter that house, is bombarded and flooded with all those warm, positive feelings of attachment that you had when you were a child.
Mm-hmm.
Of course you don't want to let it go. Who wants to sell paradise? Nobody.
Put up a parking mall. Galway listener says, my wife just told me last night that she's 6 weeks pregnant. Can David come and live with us from January? Thanks. Okay, well, he'll check his schedule and we'll get back to you on that one. David, thanks as always.
Thank you, Sean.
Listen in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. here on Moncrief for more parenting advice from David Carey.